Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 76 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I'm your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today, I have my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
Yay, yay!
And somebody we haven't seen in a while since this pandemic started, but just so happened he got a brand new mic today, and so we were like, let's put that thing to good use. Mr. Jamie Lovitz with us.
How's it going, fellas?
And if you're just getting into the show these days, you haven't seen Jamie. He was on a lot in season one, but he is our like weekend editor. He also is our resident Star Trek guru and one of our comic gurus, which was appropriate for today's episode because Star Trek Discovery Season 3 has just dropped. And me and Jamie are going to get into that because we are, I guess, the two Star Trek guys around here. So we got to talk about and represent for Star Trek on the excellent CBS All Access that is just coming back again, like I said. And we're going to talk about some big things that are happening all across the board. We got horror TV to talk about. We got regular Marvel TV or Marvel stuff to talk about. We got a couple anime mentions, some gaming stuff. And we're going to deep dive into what's going on in some big events in comics this week. We're going to do an X-Men, X of Swords update, plus we're going to tackle Amazing Spider-Man 50 and the final big reveal of that series, kind of long-running villain Kindred has been made, and it is something to talk about. Plus, it looks like Matt wants to stump for Captain Marvel in here, too.
So it's Ten of Swords going forward.
Ten of Swords? Like
Ten of Swords.
Since when?
Yeah,
it's always been Ten of Swords.
Oh,
that's not what Hickman said.
You were handing Charlie Ridgely another win.
I thought Charlie said it was X. Yeah, it's
a tarot thing. The Ten of Swords card.
Yeah, I know. I listened to that episode. That's what Charlie was arguing, that it was Ten of Swords. At this point, I don't care. I call it X. I call it Ten because it works out every way. That's the genius of Hickman because, I mean, X is like a swords clashing. It's X-Men, you know. I mean, it's a lot of stuff. So
stands for the same thing as the X in XFL what it is.
Yeah. So here we go. We're going to talk about this Marvel X-Men event, something of sorts that we will get into the latest chapters of. And like I said, Captain Marvel. So let's start at the top. One thing we did not mention, but we're definitely going to get into is right at the top. We're going to talk about DC Comics. So a lot of weird stuff has happened over DC Comics over like the last year or so. There was some massive downsizing that happened, and there was this plan that they had for kind of, it wasn't, I don't even know how to describe it. I've always been like kind of weirded out about the language, but it was DC 5G, which was their kind of reordering of their timeline into these generations that were going to make more sense for the kind of established canon. And start with like generation one. They were going to make Wonder Woman this first hero, and it was going to go up to the current generation of heroes, which would be four, and then introduce generation five, which would be these future heroes, where kind of people like Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent kind of began to age, and a new breed of heroes needed to rise up. So that all got canceled with Dan Didio and him leaving or being kind of let go from DC Comics, and everybody's been kind of wondering what the remains of 5G would be, and like what's going to be done with all this. And now we know. So what are we going to get? We are going to get DC Future State, which is this kind of mini event that they're packing into January and February of 2021, where it looks like essentially they're just trying to burn through the entire 5G concept in just like one massive kind of quote unquote event dump. But what this will do is kind of it'll basically break from the current line of DC Comics storylines and kind of look in on these visions of basically, like we said, the 5G concept would be like when these heroes started to age out, what this new age of heroes would look like in those kinds of stories that could potentially set the stage. And we have a full breakdown. There's a whole press release. There's covers. I did like there's like 20 covers we posted on comicbook.com DC. And you can check out. Some of them are cooler than others. Some of the concepts do look kind of interesting, but I feel like this is just kind of like taking the 5G and dumping it as a kind of hype event and then picking and choosing the elements you like that are going to work and then just being like, yay.
But I mean, that's awesome. Personally, that's great.
It's like those 2 months when Marvel canceled all its books during Secret Wars, right? It was like, let's just do a bunch of other weird stuff. And if people like it, we'll bring it back when we put the continuity back.
Yeah, I mean, but like, okay, you guys are so cynical. This is like, I feel like this is
that wasn't. Best. I loved that Secret Wars. Yeah, that wasn't cynicism. Like,
yeah, okay, I don't hate that. I don't hate any of this. I love the DC. Okay. I love
that's not how you really
things.
Delivered it, though. Look, you were like, oh, it's some cool things. Like, there's some really
know,
cool
but,
stuff
but
in here.
But it is a massive reduction of what 5G was.
But 5G was flawed anyway. Like, that's okay, the point that the Dio's whole 5G plan. Was kind of
you're going in the woods that I will not follow you.
Well, I'm saying like that plan was not necessary. I love the concept because like DC leans hard into their legacy characters, and that's what makes them special. That's actually why, in some cases, like some of the best stories have been heroes passing the baton to other heroes, and then DC gets cold feet and then goes back to the status quo. And 5G was like this. Like overcorrect. Like I felt like 5G was this whole like we're going to do everything. Everything has to be line wide. And what I love about this is that it's not New 52. It's not this permanent status quo change. We're going to do all this really cool stuff. Some of the seeds has already been planted, right? And then we're going to exactly like you said, cherry pick the things that the characters we want to move in to continuity. But like I feel like this is a much smarter way. It's over 2 months. Yes, there's a ton of tie-ins and stuff, but like then things revert to the regular continuity and some of those story. Like it's not a wipe and erase, which is what DC does all the time. This is actually like a smart way to implement that 5G stuff and yet not just like hit the throttle and throw out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. Like that's, I feel like that's the best part. Like Joe moving, hopefully Joe Moline of Far Sector, like moving into Red X, like some of those characters like coming into the core continuity or being established in Earths themselves, that's really cool. Andy is like suddenly grown up. Aquaman and Mera's daughter is like suddenly grown up. Are we going to keep that? Are we not? There's some really cool stuff in here. And I like the idea of it springing and then like it's just 2 months though. Like it's not this line wide. You got to get your brain around it and then you can go back to the status quo. Like I like that.
Keep in mind, too, that DC right now has been seeing a lot of success with its middle grade graphic novels and with its black label books. The book market is very big right now. And so by doing this as this kind of self-contained event, it'll be 2 months in the direct market. But it's, in theory, a kind of self-contained stories that they can then put into book markets to kind of double dip. So it makes marketing sense. Plus, whatever... Continuity is whatever. I enjoy continuity. But what I'm looking at is John Ridley writing Batman and Becky Cloonan doing Midnighter and Gene Yang coming back and doing stuff. That's what has me excited is that they cleared the deck for a lot of their, a lot of new voices to come in or voices like Gene Yang who have been there, but not necessarily, you know, their Superman run kind of got overshadowed to come and do something that is all theirs. And that to me is very exciting.
Yeah, their middle grade stuff has been some of the best stuff they've been putting out in like over the last 2 years. So yeah, definitely. And their graphic novels in general.
I like the creative aspect, but I like to be balanced. So I keep a cynical thing. And like, I just want to call this what this is. Cause to me, this is kind of like making the best situation out of a lot of muddled mess you have. I feel like this is also, we haven't gotten into it, but this is going to be what they're now doing is spinning this 5G concept into being kind of the outcome of whatever happens in Dark Knight death metal. So I feel like this metal stuff has become a muddled mess with the multiverse and all this crazy crap. The 5G stuff has just become a muddled mess with all this crazy crap. And they're just going to like try to like kind of Houdini this whole thing into something at least hype and worthwhile. And it could work out. I'm not doubting the plan for the reasons you said. Like, I mean, a really cool kind of some of this dark detective stuff for Batman I could see being a black label or getting kind of deeper into this like later on. So I'm not against it, but like I just like to point out that I feel like I see pieces of a lot of mess that are being swept together in a pile. Like, here we go. Let's just kind of fix ourselves here.
if you want the cynical version of what we talked about earlier, does anybody remember Convergence, the event they came up with to cover while they moved from the East Coast to the West Coast? Yes. Nobody remembers that series.
That was terrible.
But they took, you know, it was a way for them to set up resetting Superman's continuity for DC Rebirth, which people seem to enjoy. I didn't really follow it, but people liked having that Superman back. So I feel like this is another one of those things where even if the event doesn't quote unquote matter in a year from now, there are still pieces of it that they're going to see what's popular and pull. And hopefully it's something more enjoyable than the Batman Who Laughs.
I think that, but I think in like the differences between Convergence and some of those other things, that those were meant to be, those weren't just throwing stuff at a wall. Like there was actually like, there was a plan. No, there was a plan in place and it failed.
The plan was
the execution was terrible on those things. And like I said in a tweet earlier, I'm really excited about this. It comes down to execution. If you nail it,
oh, absolutely.
You actually tell great stories, then it'll be fine. But in the past, what they've done is they just kind of stick to their editorial mandate and they don't tell good stories. So it doesn't succeed in either way. And then we get like two things that people liked and they take them. That's it. Hopefully this is not that.
Well, this may be a chance for, you know, they had that editorial shakeup. This could be like the chance for that new leadership team to come out and say, here's what we've got. It's good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to see how it goes. It's kicking off January, February of 2021. So we're going to check out DC Future State. As I said, we have a whole kind of gallery with the full kind of announcement from DC with the details, the creative teams, all that stuff. A gallery of covers. It all kind of at least looks pretty cool. So check that out on comicbook.com DC. Moving right along to other reboots we're getting. Dexter. Didn't think this would happen in 2020, did you? But Dexter's coming back. If you don't know, Dexter was basically a 2000s to 2010 series that was really popular after kind of breaking out on 6 Feet Under. Michael C. Hall stepped into this role as Dexter. And it was about a serial. It was on the wave of that big, like the big, I mean, I don't like calling it the serial killer wave, but, you know, there was this wave of serial killer TV that really jumped off in the 2000s to 2010.
Complicated Men was the trend.
What was it?
Complicated Men. That's essentially what it was.
Complicated Men. Yes.
I mean, that was Showtime's whole shtick for, it feels like, for years.
AMC, HBO. Yeah.
Yeah, we're not going to get into that. We're going to leave that one alone. but basically, it was about a serial killer who had kind of harnessed his urges to kill other serial killers, which on paper was a pretty awesome premise. And it had a great cast led by Michael C. Hall. But infamously, because I really got into this business like when Dexter was coming through its later seasons and coming towards an end. And I just remember just like the dumpster fire of those last couple seasons after Dexter had hit like this really strong stride, specifically with like the John Lithgow season and that whole thing, and which ended with his, you know, spoilers on a very, 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 very,
very old,
old
season,
show. But it ended with his wife, of course, being killed. So, yeah, I'm kind of ambivalent. I'm hoping like this revival or reboot that they're now doing in 2021 is gonna kind of be like more of a course correction and not just, you know, Jordan coming out of retirement again, you know, to embarrass himself. So thoughts, was anybody really burned by Dexter here?
I only ever saw the first couple seasons, so I wasn't there for the dumpster fire at the end.
I was the same way. I just lost interest midway. And then I heard about the finale so much that I went and watched it. I was like, oh, that's disappointing. But, you know, I mean, I kind of feel the same way you do, though. Like, I feel like this should be a Connor situation where, like, they go back and just say, hey, and it really happened. Let's just take pieces we like and ignore others and just like pick up, like, let's just move. You know, we'll see if they do that or not.
Yeah, it was like, I didn't get into like the later season. I watched the Lithgow season because I had heard so many great things about it and the Trinity Killer and that whole storyline which was excellent. And I also had a friend from high school who ended up being on that show. Yeah. So it was never like my jam. I wasn't into Showtime as hard back then. So
yeah,
this is kind of making me curious to go back and rewatch Dexter now and like kind of catch up and see like what is going on and like what this is going to be, what I'm in for and kind of getting this new. But they did announce it in the best way possible. Like, I do have to kind of shout out the marketing for this. They just, Dexter on Showtime, which I didn't even know was like a Twitter thing, like appeared. And it just said, surprise, MF-er. And didn't you say MF-er? He's back, Dexter. And it's just like a promo, like a little teaser promo, which is just, I mean, that's right up there with my Frank's Red Hot advertising. I love that. Like, I love companies when they kind of, when they take the bold approach.
Where did that show leave him? Like, all I've heard is something about a lumberjack. I don't really understand.
You're asking me, Matt.
He faked his own death.
That's right.
And he's now under the guise of a lumberjack. And it was, you know, it was just like people either expected like major ramifications or him to die, right? Like there was kind of some, and then for it to just kind of feel like, oh no, he just leaves and he's just out there. And it didn't feel like there was a resolution to anything either way, whether either side of the extreme, whether you wanted him to die or whether you wanted him to keep killing, it just felt like, it felt like a mid-season finale, not a series finale is what most people seem to feel. So.
Interesting.
But he's a lumberjack.
Yep.
On a scale of 1 to Game of Thrones, I want to know how people
rank that ending. Driving a boat into a hurricane. There's a lot of crazy stuff that happens in that Yeah, it was a nuts finale and people were really mad and yeah. So I don't know. I'm not going to dwell on this. I mean, the end is I didn't expect Dexter to come back. I'm kind of ambivalent. I now need to go back and actually sit down and like watch this series and see what it's all about and kind of come back to it. But if you're were a big Dexter fan, yay. Happy for you, 2020. Other things we didn't know we were going to be getting this year. We're getting a Buck Rogers reboot.
Yay.
Yeah. I mean,
yay.
Yeah. I never really, all these old serial characters, I always just kind of grimace when they're kind of rebooted because they come from times and places. I don't know. There's a lot of questionable stuff in these things and it didn't work out so well for like John Carter and Tarzan never successfully made a comeback. And I don't know that they need to.
Yeah.
Like I don't need to root for like Civil War escapee John Carter.
Yeah. That was all in, oh, what's it called? Lovecraft County.
Yeah,
right?
They do a great job.
He's like, he was a Confederate?
That.
I'm sorry. Why? Yeah. Why are we doing this?
Yeah, I love that show, Lovecraft Country, but that's a different thing. So, yeah. But basically, Buck Rogers, you see it imitated all the time. It's about a man who goes down a mine and wakes up way in the future, in the middle of a future war. Like, I don't know. It's one of those things that I feel like that concept is crazy outdated. There's so many ways that could go wrong. I mean, but I guess it's at Legendary, so I guess you could also get it kind of right. I'm not sure. Unless anybody has any strong feelings about Buck Rogers, I'm not going to dwell on that. I'm going to move right along. We're also getting a reboot of I Know What You Did Last Summer and coming to our new hero, which is Amazon Prime. We've been talking about how Amazon Prime is like quietly creeping up and really kind of going for the gold as the streaming kind of king, especially with some original series. And we've also been talking about how they've quietly been scooping up like popular IPs that they're refashioning, like Lord of the Rings. What was the other big one they got this year?
Fallout.
That's right. We have like Fallout coming. Now they're going horror route with I Know What You Did Last Summer. Which
got to cover all your bases.
Yeah, you do. And if you were a 90s kid like me, like this was a big deal. This was like one of those. There are a couple films growing up that I grew up on the tail end of like in enough of a town where like there were those movies that were like the events that your whole town like gathered in, especially like teenagers. Like I think I was on the tail end of that before it just became a whole like soulless Cineplex system. But I Know What You Did Last Summer was a big one. because I just remember just like, you know, high school, sneaking in cases of beer, sitting with everybody, trying to sit with some girl who would like grab your arm when it was scary parts. Like, yeah. And we had a good time just looking at Jennifer Love Hewitt and all them like screaming and stuff. Of course, it went quickly downhill after that, if there was even a hill that it sat on ever. I'm not sure. But this is kind of cool to kind of get it back. And they're going to do another kind of twisted take on these. And it's going to be a modern take. And, you know, it's coming from Sarah Goodman. And I don't know what exactly that all means. And Sarah Goodman did Preacher and Gossip Girl. So she knows kind of really how to put some twists on these genres. And there's a really smart way that this could be done. But if you don't know the concept, it's about a group of kids who are out partying. They hit somebody on the road. And basically that they think they get rid of the body. But then a year later, members of this kind of hit and run crew start dying off, and they with messages left at the scene saying, "I know what you did last summer."
Talk about a vintage 90s cast, by the way. If you want the 90s in a nutshell, you go watch this movie, and it's Sarah Michelle Gellar, Freddie Prinze Jr., Jennifer Love Hewitt, and Matthew Lillard. That's 90s and a little capsule.
Oh, no, not Matthew Lillard. It was also Ryan Felipe.
Yes,
Felipe.
That's right.
Yep, but still, yep. Quintessential 90s. Right up there with Cruel Intentions. Those are the 90s.
Oh, man. Yeah. I just watched the first one, by the way, like maybe a month and a half ago. Anissa had it on one day, and then I got sucked in and like watched the rest of it just because I was like, oh, man, I forgot about this movie. You know what? That's not that bad. It was actually pretty fun to watch.
It's a fun horror B movie. It's stupid, but it's fun. The scene, like, what do you want? Like, and just like the camera, just like focusing on Jennifer Love Hewitt's chest as she like twirls around. You're just like, man.
So, and the hook and 90s, like all that stuff. There's some really like, it was fun. I'm looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to this more than like every time the new screens get announced or like the reboots or whatever. I'm kind of like over that franchise a little, but like this one, I feel like we haven't really mined it. So it's just kind of sat there, you know?
Yeah,
like,
and there's a great way to do this. I mean, in this modern age with like social media and stuff like that, the whole blackmail and the whole kind of concept of, you know, freaking somebody out with like, I know this secret of yours and kind of showing to them can really actually be fun. Like you could do scenes with people on their cell phones and then have them get killed because the killer's like right there. There's a lot of stuff to do. And there's a lot of ways to spin it because the old creepy guy with the hook and the fisherman, like you can spin that into an actual kind of more fun reveal about like an mystery that could sustain a series. Yeah. So about deepening about who this person was, what their connections to people in town, like what's going on here and all that stuff. And what this person's death does, like, and kind of catalyze it. So looking forward to this actually.
Who knew that on the podcast that has the Dexter revival, that this would be the thing that excited the Comic Book Nation crew.
Hey, man, we like what we like. We like what we like. That's okay. All right, we're going to stop for a minute after our TV reboot, pay some bills, come back. We got to talk a little bit more about what's going on Marvel Comics, gaming, and review Star Trek Discovery Season 3. So stay tuned for all of that.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
All right, so we're back. Another quick update. So talking about things that have been going on for long, before I even started working here, I think we were hearing that Oscar-winning writer John Ridley, who did 12 Years a Slave and wrote American Crimes first season, basically was going to be hooking up with Marvel and doing some kind of project. This was in 2015. We didn't know if it was going to be movies, TV, a little bit of both, multiple things. And now, like, it's like John Ridley day today, but we finally figured out, like, what he's going to be doing for Marvel first and foremost. And it's the thing everybody expected, which is Wolverine, black, white, and blood.
Shink.
Yeah, so John Ridley will be joining Wolverine Black, White, and Blood in issue number 3, which will see Wolverine going back to Japan and facing Silver Samurai, which, you know, sounds like a cool... It sounds like the Wolverine, basically, in a lot of ways, but with John Ridley writing it, which could be really cool. So I just thought I'd mention that because that was just very cathartic for me to finally figure out what the hell Marvel is doing with John Ridley, because it's been like every couple of like years I have to do one article that's like, John Ridley gives an update on Marvel things. They'd be like, uh-huh. And that was like the article.
It's starting to, it's starting to be up there with like Expendables 4 and until recently, National Treasure 3.
Yeah, right.
Like, yeah, those stories that I feel like I've written since I got to comic book.
I've been doing this like since the days when we were thinking John Ridley was making the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. third spinoff wasn't like Mockingbird and
Most Wanted.
Yeah, Most Wanted.
Yeah, we thought we were getting Most Wanted and a John Ridley spinoff, and
Also, I think the anthology format is just simply the best format for Wolverine, like period.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, just like one-shot stories about Wolverine that are kind of like deep and stuff, or they're the best, man. Yeah, you don't need weird comic booky stories, but that's neither here than there. We'll get to the comics in a minute. Next announcement is that Dragon Ball Super is going to be continuing for all our anime fans. Yeah, this has been a big question because nobody knows. The anime stopped 2 years ago now, which is crazy to think about.
Jeez.
And the manga has been going, and the property is more popular and profitable than ever. So everybody's been like wondering, like, what is going on? Are we getting more anime? Are they going to reboot? Is going to be the next Dragon Ball series? Because every couple years, you know, every decade or so, Dragon Ball launches as a new series, you know, with Z, then GT, then Super. So we've been wondering with that. But we've confirmed that after the current manga arc, which has been, you know, it started off exciting, it's kind of losing its flair, the manga will continue. So there will be a new Dragon Ball story arc that is being planned as we are recording this. And so that series will keep going. It's not going to be a reboot right now. It looks like the manga is going to keep going, but we still don't know anything about the anime or the movies. We have no idea. But for right now, it looks like the content is still going to be Dragon Ball Super, and it is going to still be moving forward. So that was just a quick shout out from the anime side.
Do we know why they stopped? Like, why did they stop doing the anime?
No, it's actually, and, you know, I hope they never answer because we write great articles that get very popular about this. the speculation from the industry is that they don't need to. Making an anime series is like one of the most costly and exhaustive, you know, labor processes you can do in that industry. And Dragon Ball, like I said, has never been more popular or more profitable. And they are making these profits now off the manga, a promo anime, the card game, arcade game, Dragon Ball Heroes, which is popular in Japan, various games they're releasing for consoles and stuff like that, merchandise. They're making like billions of yen, like some of the highest they've ever made. So they're kind of thinking is, if you're making the money and your IP is still viable and you don't have to do a series to generate that money in fame, why would you? And
it's
kind of like,
makes sense.
Yeah, and even though fans...
It sucks for fans, but it makes total business sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
So they're just kind of scooping in the money anyway. How long that will last, nobody knows. But we're the manga is still moving forward. And since now people like us are addicted, we just hype the manga as if it's just as good as an anime. And people start listening, I guess. So there you go. It's a good cycle. All right, moving right along. Matt has some gaming updates we want to get to. Take us through them, buddy.
All right. So the big one was the new State of Play, which we got to see the PS5 UI. For those who have been on the PS4, the UI has been a little like some people love it. Some people hate it. Some people prefer. Well, actually, it's not rarely people prefer the Microsoft UI to that, but it's got its detractors. And for me, like, it is a little slow. So seeing what the PS5 can do was pretty interesting. The bigger points, of course, from like the sleek layout. I mean, it's like a very like black and gray layout. I mean, it's nice. It's nothing hugely fancy, but the bigger things are like how the control center actually fits into like the overall experience. So like once you hit the PlayStation button, it'll bring up the control panel and you'll be able to do a lot of things from there. All of it's the things that actually directly affect the game though. So like for instance, if you're playing, let's say Assassin's Creed, they showed Sackboy, but let's say Assassin's Creed. So it'll actually pull up different like missions and the percentage that you are finished with them. Like with it, like the PlayStation pulls that up. So it's like, hey, you're on this mission in the game you're playing. Here's how much you've completed. And then it'll like estimate like how much time you have to complete that. And then it'll like recommend different things like within the game. So like it's really kind of a seamless experience. It'll also actually provide help. So if one of the cool things they showed was like without having to like leave the PlayStation to like go Google, hey, how do I get through this particular sequence or level, you can actually like, you can do that within the PlayStation. It'll pull up a video that you can then like sit side by side, kind of like letterboxed, and then be playing as you're watching it all on the same screen. So like you're doing it all within the interface, which is actually kind of cool. They also talked about some of the chat functions and how now you won't have to like, it feels like in the PS4, you have to do anything. You have to go through like three screens, or you have to just like go out to the main screen. And it's almost easier to just go out to the main screen, like hit the top thing and go over like the old fashioned way. It's kind of easier to do that and not as quick. Here, it's pretty seamless. Like you'll be able to like, as soon as you get an invite to chat, you'll just hit the button there. It automatically takes you to chat. You don't have to exit back out. So there's a lot of like, you know, quality of life things and speed up things that should like make the experience better. So like that was kind of the bigger takeaways from that. You can actually see on comicbook.com, of course, we have the full video that like walks you through the entire thing. It's worth watching, especially if you're kind of, you know, on the fence for things. The other big thing is, of course, okay, so when we got the tease that there was a third Spider-Man character in Miles Morales, everyone like flipped. And then it was a little bit of a letdown to learn that the third character was like a cat. However, once we saw the footage of said cat in the game, it's kind of amazing. So if you haven't heard, essentially, one of the side missions in the game for Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales has him like helping a bodega owner. And so there's like video where you can watch kind of the side quest play out and you'll go tackle a few things for him. And you're trying to find his cat, who, by the way, is named Spider-Man. So that's awesome. So then once you find the cat and you bring him back, you unlock a costume that is essentially really like a hoodie with like the Spider-Man mask, and it's just a couple of changes. But the biggest thing is that it has a backpack, and in the backpack is the cat, who has a Spider-Man mask on over like half his head, right? And so the cat like pops out of the backpack, which is like fun, but like, okay, it's like a mild visual thing. However, when you're playing in that costume, the cat actually like in combat pops out of the backpack and like attacks people that you are attacking. It's ridiculous. And it's like not like going to sway anyone to like buying a console or anything. But I was let down when I first like heard the revelation that it was a cat. And then upon seeing it, and like, it's so ridiculous and adorable that I love it. So that is definitely something you want to check out. That is a costume I imagine we'll be seeing a lot of videos of when that game actually releases. Final thing is you can actually go to comicbook.com to check out all of our deep dive impressions on Assassin's Creed Valhalla. You can also, they released like a full developer walkthrough where they walk through raids and a bunch of different story missions. I want to say it is flitting. I thought it was flighting at first, but I believe they pronounced it flitting, which is the like Viking rap battle that you can do within the game. So it's essentially like you have a choice, a couple different choices to pick of insults to throw at the other person, and then they come back at you, and it's this whole like back and forth rap battle thing. They showed some of that off. They showed some of the dice game stuff. The raids look really fun, and the system is like greatly expanded. You'll still be sailing like you were in Odyssey, but a lot of those things that we love in Odyssey are coming back, but they did tweak some stuff. So like one of the biggest things is the modern day storyline in Odyssey and Origins has involved Layla Hassan. And typically what happens in Assassin's Creed games is that all of a sudden, for whatever reason, you're taken out of the Animus and you're thrown to the modern day. And so then you do like a sequence and then you go back into the Animus. Here, they want to kind of change that up and make it more organic. So, like, as Eivor, you're going to find different like artifacts and things within the world that will like let you, you're staying in the Animus, but then you'll do things as Layla, and it will have implications on the modern day story. And so it's, but it's all within the Animus, and you're not really like separating them. It's supposed to be a lot more organic. You can do them if you, some of them if you want, others you don't have to, but it'll all flesh out the overall story. So that's really, that's really cool. And I think that's something that fans have wanted from the modern day for a while. Also, they said it will conclude her modern day story, not the overall modern day story, but Layla specifically, which has actually been really good over the last couple of games. So lots of stuff you can check out on comicbook.com if you want more info, but that is gaming.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Moving right along. That's our news flash. Let's get into our deep dive today. We are going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery Season 3. Feels like, wow, I mean, Jamie Lovett, it feels like it's been, it was like a whole other world when we last left Star Trek Discovery. I feel like we were in a different timeline, let alone the Discovery characters. So if you don't remember, Star Trek Discovery was launched, and it was originally a kind of prequel to the original series. It was about Captain Michael Burnham, who was Spock's half-sister, who was involved in this big kind of incident in the Klingon War. And the first season kind of dealt with like all of that and trying to prevent the Klingon War. The second season got a little more trippy and Star Trek-y as it went into kind of the mystery of this Red Angel that we found out came from the future to prevent this AI from kind of rising up and causing this kind of AI apocalypse from the basically start within Starfleet Secret Service, which is Section 6, I think it is.
Section 31.
31. Section 6 is somebody else's secret team. 31. Yeah, and yeah, that all kind of got averted. We met Spock, and we set up the events of the original kind of Enterprise crew with Captain Pike and Number One and Spock, who will now spin off into their own series, Worlds Beyond. But this, at the end, to kind of prevent a lot of timey-wimey stuff and make sure that everything in the timeline kind of fit together, Discovery had to take itself out of the equation by transporting the crew, the ship, and Michael Burnham into the future, which is where we pick up with Star Trek Discovery Season 3 with Michael Burnham literally crash landing into the future and what all happens there. Jamie, you reviewed this premiere episode. Is that all you've seen so far?
I've seen the first four episodes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
You, why don't you give us a kind of non-spoiler impression of how Star Trek Discovery Season 3 unfolds?
So as you see, if you watch the first episode, Michael does not come out alongside the Discovery. So at the very beginning, she and the Discovery are trying to find each other. This is complicated by the burn, which is this event that they talk about in the first episode where all of the dilithium, not all of it, most of the dilithium just stopped working one day. And dilithium is needed for warp travel. So a whole bunch of starships exploded. And now traveling around the galaxy is way harder than it used to be. And what this does is essentially it turns the galaxy into the Wild West again. The Federation has essentially faded away because it couldn't maintain control over this vast spread of space that it used to have members throughout. Because if you can't go to warp travel, you can barely get out of the solar system, never mind to Vulcan or wherever else you're looking to go. So that's what the season is dealing with. It's turned space into a frontier again. And the overarching story seems to be about the Discovery crew finding a purpose in this new future. And that ties to the literal search for the Federation in this new galaxy they've landed in. So yeah, it's really interesting. It makes the Star Trek feel a lot more dangerous than it has, especially during like the Next Gen era. It's almost kind of a callback to the original series where Gene Roddenberry's original pitch was wagon train to the stars. So sci-fi Western, and this has a little bit of that spirit in it as well. I think it's very good, and I think it's very interesting. Yeah, I think it's also very relevant. You know, we're living in an era where fossil fuels are being whittled away, and suddenly the most common fuel for space travel disappears from the Star Trek universe. I feel like the writers knew what they were doing with that setup.
All right. So I've seen the first episode, and I can say that I agree to with what Jamie's saying in terms of what this kind of narrative premise does for the entire premise of this Star Trek story, in the sense that you are now back in a universe. I mean, Star Trek's kind of excitement was the, or kind of what can make it mundane, is that there is so much technology and kind of things that are handled with ease. There's always like some sciencey, whyncy like explanation for how you can get around everything. And this does present more of a Wild West. It's kind of, it's not, it's the good part of like the Han Solo Star Warsy feel without copying that, in the sense that this first episode, you know, Sonequa Martin Green's character meets this guy who is a more experienced kind of hustler in this world. Cleveland Booker is his name, David Ajala, who's a great actor. And basically, he's not like a Han Solo type, and has to kind of run her through the ropes of basically how to survive in this thing where she has all these, like, has no frame of reference for how to behave and is so like a fish out of water, because she is from the Federation in this order, in this kind of science, like, you know, in this logical science-based kind of world that has completely fallen apart. And so this first episode is exciting because it is very high noon Western in space. It is like some kind of prospector who meets this like weirdo, and they have to go into town and face other kind of outlaws and things like that, and go on this epic shootout. But they do it in a creative way, and there's some creative changes with, like, instead of like teleporters, everybody has these like personal teleporters. And so they're kind of doing this chase sequence that's over teleporting and trying to get away. It's kind of Rick and Morty-ish, in a kind of cool way. But it forces kind of new elements out of the characters and introduces kind of cool things. And there is this uncertainty and unknownness to the universe, which ironically Star Trek is supposed to be about discovery, but because the mythos has been just so mined and explored and explained, like, it's hard to go anywhere in the universe anymore and feel like you're going somewhere new, because everything has to call back to this race or this quadrant or that thing. And this is kind of completely like literally new, figuratively and literally new space. So I'm hoping, like, I hope the discovery, the reunite, because I've seen the seasonal trailer and we know Michael Burnham gets back and they start this new mission. And I want to get to that, because that I hope doesn't get drawn out too long, because them, the Discovery crew, what I like is they're not on this like desperate mission to get back to the past. It's like, oh, we're in the future now. So now we're the future Star Trek show. Like, we're the prequel show. Now we're the future show. And it's like, that's an exciting premise, because we've not done that yet. Like, we've not been here yet. And there are interesting questions about the causality of what led to this and what happens and how it can tie back to some of these other series from Star Trek that are also on CBS, namely Picard and even Worlds Beyond in some ways. So
it already did with it's Strange New Worlds, by the
Strange
way.
New World Beyond, thank you.
World Beyond is the Walking Dead.
Oh, God,
your favorite Walking Dead show.
Yeah, don't confuse those two.
But you were talking about tiebacks. I thought it was interesting. They purposely sent them just far enough in the future to skip all the time travel stuff from Star Trek Enterprise, and then made that line about how they destroyed and outlawed all the time travel stuff. So that is now literally just entirely off the table, without messing up any of the continuity that came before it, which I thought was very clever. But yeah, this is the first time since, you know, Next Generation took place 100 years after the original series, and everything since then, except for Enterprise, which was a prequel, has been pretty much just building on Next Generation. Now we're jumping almost 1,000 years in the future. This is the first time since Next Gen, really, that we have the chance to develop this entirely new era of the Star Trek universe. So I think that's really exciting, and I'm interested to see what they do with it.
And I think it is finally modern Star Trek kind of finding this ground where they've been struggling to do something that is modern, more complicated, even more edgy on streaming, and appease fans that want that Roddenberry light of hope in the universe kind of thing. And what this premise does is set up a challenge that, I mean, it's a challenge, but it can be met, of once again kind of taking the chaos of the real world now and the division and all that stuff, and using Starfleet as the metaphor it was supposed to be of brightness, hope, unification, and all that stuff, and literally building that up again in front of us. on this kind of chaotic real world, or kind of, it's in the future, but it's of course meant to mirror the chaoticness and division of the world we live in now. The unrestrained capitalism, all this stuff you're already beginning to see, like everybody just looking out for themselves and like all this kind of mentality. So it's kind of a good, just a Star Trek reminder in a way of the core principles of the series. It's some heavy lifting, they got to pull it off, but it's possible. So I'm kind of excited to see how that goes, and to just write about and look into like an entire mythology of what Star Trek's future looks like. So happy to have Discovery back, definitely.
For sure.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, man,
you should watch the show.
Dude, you would love this series. Like,
I'm not the biggest Star Trek person. Like, I just never have, but like, that sounds so cool.
Discovery is for people who didn't necessarily get into Star Trek. Okay. It is like Star Trek for the people who didn't feel necessarily. Like I say, there's Burnham's friend. It's been so long since I've watched the season two. But Tilly, there's so many characters I know you would love on this thing. You would love characters like Tilly, Saru, like all of these people. Like the kind of comedic, kind of cute stuff, you'd love that stuff.
Can I say I also love that they seem to be comfortable enough to have some fun with these characters now. That sequence of Burnham getting shot with the stuff that makes her high was. I love that scene. That whole sequence. I think Sonequa Martin-Green.
Yeah, there's a lot of things.
Is fantastic in that role doing that.
There's a lot that I like about the season three on the technical level. First of all, they got a budget. I was just like, from that first sequence when she pointed, I was like, oh, look at Star Trek Discovery's got some money now. Like, look at these effects. So I was like, man, there's some extra space debris they got to put in. Like, yeah. So all of that, the effects were great, and especially that big first sequence of her coming out. And like, yeah, they obviously like trust the actors in the show a lot more now. Like, it's not just they're not making them march through the rigidity of Star Trek. Like, they let Sonequa Martin-Green like have a scene like that where she's just like on some weird alien future truth serum and doesn't know how to handle it. And she's like wonderful at acting. And same thing with what's his name? Like, who was just really great. David Ajala just kind of like hamming it up and just having some fun, and their banter and all of that like made this episode actually kind of really focused and fun on like a smaller level. So I agree. Like, yeah, and I hope that continues, because I mean, this cast has really settled in, and there are so many just great character actors on this. Like I said, Tilly's great.
Doug Jones
as Saru has been like just like one of his best roles. And I always forget her name, but I love the mechanic that they picked up in season two. And
Jet Reno, played by Tig Notaro.
Yeah, she's amazing in the show also. Anthony Rapp, of course. Like, so yeah, I hope they just let that cast kind of breathe. And of course, Michelle Yeoh just is fantastic in this, and already looks like she's been stealing scenes.
She really eats up some scenes in this these first few episodes.
Yeah, so that's gonna be great. So yeah, on the excellent CBS All Access Star Trek Discovery, like I said, I stump for this every time Star Trek comes around, but if you're not getting back in, get into Discovery, Picard, like this stuff, and it feels like it's all building into almost like slowly but inorganically like its own larger kind of universe that could one day even have big events and stuff. So I'm kind of,
they said they got a plan till 2027. So get on board.
I believe them. All right. That's Star Trek. We're going to hop out of that and into comics. So this week's comics, we're going to talk about Ten of Swords. We'll go with Ten of Swords. The X-Men event. We're going to get our latest update. Matt, Jim, and Charlie did one on last Friday's show. So I think we're going to take these every Friday, because we got to read all these books and kind of put it together in our heads. But I actually wanted to start with Amazing Spider-Man this week. So Amazing Spider-Man, we haven't really gotten into that. I mean, because it's been here, but it's not like my favoriteest thing in the world these days. The Spider-Man mythology has gotten kind of convoluted with characters and totems and stuff. But there has been this interesting thing since this new iteration of Amazing Spider-Man launched. There has been this villain kind of lurking around the edges. And when I wrote about this, I said, you know, it's been a while since Spider-Man's done this long of a villain buildup. I think even since like the Green Goblin mystery days, the classic one about who this kind of weird overarching villain dude who keeps showing up is, Kindred, who's basically like some scarier version of X-Men's Maggot, who I bet Matt thought it was Maggot for a long time. He rolls around with centipedes.
It does have a similar vibe.
Yeah, with centipedes and stuff like that.
Eenie and Meanie, man.
And so this is Amazing Spider-Man 50 is when they drop the reveal of who Kindred is and like how he's tied to Spider-Man. And it's a weird issue, to be fair. It is a kind of weird issue.
By the way, full spoilers coming.
Yeah, full spoilers coming in. We're going to talk about this. So If you don't want to know some major spoilers for Amazing Spider-Man, please just skip ahead, because we're going to be talking about spoilers about all these comics. But this is a major enough that I put like several spoiler warnings in this article. But we learn basically, last spoiler warning, that Kindred is actually Harry Osborn. The resurrected Harry Osborn, who's been kind of resurrected in this demonic form and has been kind of mastermind pulling the strings around Peter Parker's life. Like I said, since I think about what, issue 5 of this new Amazing Spider-Man series?
Yeah, they've been playing that scene for a long time.
Long time. And how we get this is indirectly, because this issue, Kindred's starting to make some big moves to kind of really mess with Peter Parker directly by digging up Captain George Stacy and Gwen Stacy's corpse. And he's doing a kind of Joker-style death of the family, let's have dinner type deal. Meanwhile, we're kind of coming off this Return of the Green Goblin storyline where Peter Parker kind of had to make that Batman Joker. There's a lot of Batman vibes in this Spider-Man story, but where he had to do that Batman Joker, like kill him, save a lot more people type deal. And he decided to, Peter Parker kind of made the half-assed decision not to kill Norman himself, but throw him out of the safety vessel and leave him for Sin Eater to kind of get. And so in this issue, of course, Sin Eater does catch up to Norman Osborn and, you know, blast him. Although I do love Norman's like final quote unquote death sequence, because he goes through the various personalities of Norman Osborn, which was great to show just how crazy this dude is. Like, you know, at first he's just like angry villain, or he's egomaniac. Like, who do you think you are? You can't take me. Then he becomes like angry, like maniacal, abusive Norman. And then he becomes like sane Norman, like, oh, I just need help. And then Green Goblin comes out like, yeah, that's all BS. Like, just smoke this fool, which is my favorite part of this issue, that the Goblin persona is like, yeah, at this point, just smoke this fool because I'm done with him. Like, I don't need
this anymore. Yeah, that was great. I thought that was good.
Yeah. And this creepy picture of him like looking through the mask guy. But he gets blasted. And why I think this is all kind of weird is Sin Eater's such a crap character to me. I hate him like really bad. Like his, like what
his whole, how you really feel.
Like his whole powers and stuff. I hate it whenever comics begin to get into things that are like, begin to get into religious mythology, unless they're like playing on religious mythology. Like Thor's okay. I don't have to have an argument about Norse mythology with anybody to enjoy Thor. But like once you get into like the nature of sins and all that stuff, and Sin Eater blasting people and taking their sins, like it gets weird. It gets even weirder with whatever the hell Kindred is doing, like with this Sin Eater power. But he kind of draws that out of Sin Eater once, because I guess Norman's like the end of his Sin Eater collection that Kindred then uses to kind of somehow infect the spider people, which is some weird thing that's still unfolding. But the offshoot is that Norman Osborn, of course, wakes up and now he's like good Norman Osborn because he doesn't have all this evil stuff inside of him. And he kind of lets Dr. Caffalo's clone lady know that, you know, he's known that for a while that Kindred is Harry Osborn. And we see Kindred looking in the mirror, and of course he sees himself as Harry Osborn still. So what do you guys think? Because there's been some big, crazy reveals in Spider-Man over the years, especially when the Osborns are concerned. The first Green Goblin is still one of my favorite storylines, because that was such a mystery about who this Green Goblin was. And then you find out it's like Spider-Man's surrogate dad, and that broke everybody's hearts, killed Gwen Stacy, did all that. The other big one I remember was from the 90s when we found out at the end of the crappy clone saga.
Kane? Are you going to say Kane or Ben Reilly?
No, neither. That at the end of all that, after Kane reveal, the Jackal reveal, all that, that of course it's revealed that pulling. That was Norman Osborn, who was still alive and hadn't been around in many, 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 many years, which was actually a good reveal. That was actually like the one that like blew my mind. How do you guys feel about this one?
I think I am at the point with the Osborn family. I haven't really been following this run because I read some issues and it just did nothing for me. But I think I am at the point with the Osborn family stuff that I am with the Joker stuff and Batman, where it's like, just please give it a rest for a while. Like every mystery ends up being, it's Norman's back, or in this case, it's Harry's back, or the Joker's back, whatever.
I agree with
that. Didn't we already do specifically this reveal, like when Harry was the second Green Goblin or whatever?
Yes.
Like it feels like such a retread.
I feel like an apt of, and Joker's a good one too. I feel like an apt comparison is always Zoom in Flash. Every reveal it feels like in the last 10 years of Flash books, it's always Zoom. So that last page is always, hey, I'm back, or I'm dead. I'm not dead. I was turned inside out, like whatever
it is. I'm dying right now, but I'm not dead yet.
It's always Zoom, and every time I'm deflated, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sick of this. I feel that way. I felt at least a little shock because, and this will come as more, I couldn't remember when, like, what Harry Osborn was. Like, I didn't remember if he was dead, alive, like, stuck somewhere. Like, I didn't remember. Honestly. So I was like, oh, hey, Harry. But it wasn't out of, like, oh, that's a great thing. It was just, like, I don't know what happened to him. So, okay. But, yeah, I'm kind of with Jamie. Like, when it comes to the Osborns, it's Osborns, Jokers, Zoom. Like, those characters and those concepts just need, like, a really long break, not like comic book break, because like comic book break, you know, like they'll take 20 issues off or whatever, a year. It needs like, I need three years.
No,
like,
let's be clear. Why I like the Spider-Man clone reveal of Norman Osborn, because it had been like what, like 15, 20 years since like Norman Osborn had died in comics and he had been dead.
That was Bucky resurrection level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's been a minute.
Yeah.
You can't get those anymore because they do it 2 years in or a year in or 20 issues in. It just always feels like I just saw him.
Yeah, there's this vicious cycle where they can't build new villains because in order to hook readers, you have to have a mystery. But then when you reveal the mystery, it has to be a big enough payoff to matter. But because you didn't build up any new villains, the only thing you have to fall back on for that reveal is an old villain. And it's the same old villain you've done for the last three cliffhanger reveals. So because, you know, they're so reliant on those last page reveals to hook readers in, they keep having to use the same reveals over and over again. They can't create these new villains that have the same weight as the Joker or Norman Osborn or whatever.
When was the last new Spider-Man villain that like really stuck? Like when was the last one? Mr. Negative?
Yeah. Mr. Negative's the first one to come to mind.
He's the one that's got the most fame now.
Right? Okay. So that's that's the one that's
like probably Carnage before that.
That's been a minute.
That was the 90s. That was a minute.
Yeah, I don't count Spider-Man. I don't know.
It's like allies, I think, like, you know, Flash Thompson, Venom, I think comes to mind like that. Like that's relatively recent in comic book time anyway. But like, but villains, it's been a while. Yeah. That character has some of the best villains ever, but I feel like that character is in desperate need of a new threat because I'm really Flash too. Flash, please, for the love of Lord, get Flash a new villain. I'm so tired of the Rogues and I am tired of Zoom. But yeah, like I feel like that character needs a little shot. Yeah.
I think we're going to move on to just get to Ten of Swords, but I think the most telling thing that for me was I wrote up two articles from this, one that it was Harry who's kindred and one that Norman Osborn is apparently like now soul cleansed and good. And as I was writing it, I think it's telling that I was more interested in the Norman part than the Harry part. Cause I was like, that's going to really mess with people's minds if Norman Osborn is suddenly a good guy, like for real.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, that would mentally F Spider-Man for a long time. He'd be like paranoid forever. Two, what you could do with Norman Osborn in a larger Marvel universe as an actual altruistic, good meaning person would be interesting. I mean, you're basically creating a replacement for Tony Stark, who's like a more demented Tony Stark, which could be kind of interesting.
This has clone Magneto energy to me. Remember Joseph?
No. Joseph?
Yeah.
Stop it.
No, don't bring that.
There's no need to bring up Joseph. We've all forgotten that. There's a lot of those late 90s X-Men things we all want to forget.
Poor Joseph.
Never forget.
No, please, God. All right. So let's end today on Maggot's Ten of
better
Swords.
Than Joseph.
Stop it. Stop it. But yes, he is. and if Kindred has any right to exist, Maggot does too. Let's be real. But Ten of Swords. So when last we left off, Matt, you had done like the Wolverine, like the Wolverine Marauders stuff, basically Wolverine getting the Muramasa in this? Yes.
The Muramasa sword.
Muramasa sword. Right? And and Storm in that excellent kind of one shot about Storm getting the Wakanda sword that she needed and that kind of whole fallout. This week was Hellions, New Mutants and Cable. And I think after kind of being this far into it now, because what are we like? We're like about what, 7 issues in?
This is chapter 8.
No, 6, 7, and 8. This was 6, 7, 8.
Yeah.
So we're 8 chapters in of 22. All right. I can say that what I like right now is I like the stories more that go in depth about the individual warriors in the tournament and like
yes.
what they're going through and what, and that builds it up more than the larger kind of Krakoa-ness of it all and the universe of all. Those stories about the individual warriors, like what they're up against in these fights and kind of emotionally and just strategically and everything, are much more interesting to me. And so the books that kind of lean into that more heavily, I'm enjoying more. And the books that don't, I enjoy less. But the good news is most of them so far have leaned into that. So like, I really like the Wolverine Solemn stuff. I like the Storm stuff. And so this week, it just basically boils down to me saying that this week, I really like the Doug Ramsey magic
stuff.
Yeah,
New Mutants.
Like that. New Mutants was good. And Doug Ramsey's whole dilemma about going into this fight. I wish Cable could have leaned more into some of the stuff they start. I feel like the Summers family thing, Hickman has like made as his cool squad. So everything has with them has to always be cool. And kind of like all their fights are cool. You never really have to see how they end. They just win by blasting the people or whatever. And then just like later on while they're chilling. So that kind of ticks on me because I would have liked to see more of the Cyclops, Cable, father, son. Like I'm sending my child into a mortal battle type deal. Because that was kind of the more interesting parts of that issue, so much so than the kind of big sword facility invasion thing. And Hellions is just weird. Hellions was just kind of a weird.
I loved that book.
Oh,
so
I loved
much
Hellions.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying it's definitely outside.
Yeah.
Of the normal beats of this storyline so far.
Like there's no way they succeed, right?
Yeah.
So it's just, let's see how they fail. This should be fun.
Yeah.
So
but
funny.
What makes that, I think I'm going to start reading that book more now because I haven't really gotten into it after this issue, but just because of the kind of comedic dynamics of that book are so good.
When they're having the Nanny
interplays.
Get up on the horse and they're, and you, it's just random, but like you come back to them and she's like, get me down. And there's all these little stupid, oh my God, that book made me laugh.
Just the quiet council meeting is like the best quiet council meeting we've ever had in this.
Yeah.
When Sinister's like thinks he's gotten away with it and then he has to open his mouth and then like, yeah, the vote changes.
Mm-hmm.
Magneto change. Yeah. Like those things. And that's like what the fun of like this X-Men stuff was putting all these characters on the same island, forcing them to kind of interact with each other. These classic kind of like evil mutants and heroes and just seeing the character dynamics collide is like really half the fun. So I actually did like Hellions. I mean, it was the only chapter that feels like an aside from the story, aside from like as opposed to being like the story.
Cable felt like a waste of space.
Yeah, Cable like
yeah. So.
But that's
like,
what I said. Like, I think the weakest part about these X-Men stories are the Summers stories because they are like treated like they're just the cool family, right? And like they're becoming feeling like more like Fantastic Four than X-Men in some
Cable way. I mean, started the whole thing. He put the thing in the engine. The book literally begins, "Hey, I'm going to start this thing. All right. Well, now we screwed up. And so we're going to battle a bunch of stuff in the middle, and I'm going to go fix what I did at the beginning, take the sword out, and then I bring the sword." Like it's a complete circle. And aside
from
cool Cyclops moments, there's nothing in that book, Jamie.
It's setting up things to, I really like the character interactions in that book, what they were.
What character interactions?
The stuff between Cable and Cyclops, like the way Cyclops tries to talk Cable out of it and the way Cable's like, I know I'm a teenager now, but I'm still Cable. Like I enjoyed that stuff. But the important thing, the important thing in that book isn't that Cable put the sword in and took it out. It's that Saturnine told him to go do that. It's laying groundwork for stuff that's going to come, especially in the sword book afterwards. But
yeah, that gate and what that means and all that.
Yeah,
stuff.
Like why did Saturnine want them to go see that?
Because
why did she want him to turn that thing on?
He says it in the page, though. Like he says it on that same page of like, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean like you're wrong. Like those things he's saying is like, yeah, they tried to double. It's pretty apparent. Like it's not a complicated mystery that they're trying to solve here. Like the door and the species are cool.
But you have to lay that groundwork. You can't just have a gate full of aliens pop up in chapter 21 if you didn't lay the groundwork in chapter 8.
Yeah, and also it's also what they've been subtly doing in the charts and in each book is beginning to deep. These aren't just kind of symbolic objects these people are getting. These swords each have a history. They each have a power, and they're taking careful time to kind of thread you with knowledge about what each of these artifacts is, what kind of properties they have, and what makes them uniquely powerful. And the kind of whole thing that's still a big if is if Saturnine is still, if this is a straight up as she's making it, like a tournament, because and like yeah. people just kill each other, and then what happens to the swords? And then they just decide, because all of these objects gathered together, you know, theoretically can do something like really kind of crazy.
I'm a little unclear now if it's a tournament or a, like just a big melee, because Magic tells Doug to stay near her when the fighting starts. I'm like, I don't think that's how a tournament works. He can't go into his fight and then just run behind you. I don't know where that was. But yeah, I reviewed the first issue of this for the site, and I said it reminded me of Lord of the Rings. And it's still like, to me, this has the feeling of like a fantasy novel. Like every issue feels like a chapter. And so it feels rewarding to read them one after another. They're not all isolated. Mm-hmm. And yet every series still feels like itself. Like Hellions Agreed. Still feels like Hellions. So I think it's a big credit to Hickman and the entire X-Office team that they were able to pull off such a well-structured event like this, because that's very easy to mess up and just be a big, you know, a big 90s crossover mess type deal.
Yeah, no, we've all, I think we've said the same things in our other discussions about this, that this is both blessedly simple and deeply and deep at the same time.
Give them swords. Yeah. It's so simple, so brilliant.
Yeah. But all right, that's all the time we have today. But we're going to stick with Ten of Swords or X of Swords, your favorite pronunciation, as it unfolds each week. So stay tuned for all of that. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. We want to thank you guys for tuning in. So as always, we put up new episodes every Wednesday and Friday on comicbook.com, where you can listen in on the site, or you can listen on your favorite podcast platforms. We're on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Google Playlists. You can tell smart home devices to fire up Comic Book Nation podcast, or you can watch episodes live on Facebook every Wednesday and Friday. Or if you don't catch them live, you can find us at the Comic Book Nation YouTube page. If you want to talk to us, select drop any topics, or just get into following the show, we now have the official at Comic Book Nation Twitter account that you can follow. You can follow us at the hashtag Comic Book Nation. You can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
You can find me at Jamie Lovett.
If you like the show, go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review. After this COVID madness is over, we're going to get into our merch closet. We have a bunch of t-shirts to send out to all our 5-star reviewers, and we want to send you one, so leave us a 5-star review. Otherwise, that'll do it. Thank you for tuning in to Comic Book Nation. Stay checked in, stay tuned in. We will see you guys next time. Peace.
Deuces.